It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theroux and Richard Campbell are both here. They're both in Mexico, but they're both here in spirit. We'll be talking about the latest versions of Windows 11. We're also going to talk about new hardware shown at Mobile World Congress this week in Barcelona. And Microsoft adds 4 new GPTs to Microsoft Copilot. That and the Xbox segment and more all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Richard Campbell. Episode 870, recorded Wednesday, February 28th, 2024. The return of the Copilot. Windows Weekly is brought to you by our friends at IT Pro TV, now called ACI Learning. You already know the name IT Pro TV from our network. Well, now they're a part of ACI Learning. And IT Pro has expanded its capabilities as a result, providing more support for your IT team. ACI Learning covers all your team's audit, cybersecurity, and information technology training needs, provides you with a personal account manager to make sure you aren't wasting anyone's time because, you know, there's nothing worse than sitting and watching a video about something you already know. Your account manager works with you to ensure your team only focuses on the skills that matter to your organization so you can leave unnecessary training behind. ACI Learning kept all the fun and personality of IT Pro TV while amplifying their robust solutions for all your training needs. Let your team be entertained while they train with short format content and over 7,200 hours to choose from. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. And if your team fills out the ACI form, you can find out how much you can save up to 65% off and get a free trial. That's right. Fill out the form and save up to 65% on an IT Pro Enterprise Solution Plan at go.acilearning.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft with these guys right here who are completely coincidentally both in the same country. It doesn't happen that often, especially because the country's Mexico. Paul Theroux in Mexico City. In his casa, where he lives half the time, I think. Richard Campbell on vacation in Puerto Vallarta, where Liz Taylor and Richard Burton used to sojourn and love in the sun.
I literally heard that the section just north of here they call the Beverly Hills of PV.
So. There you go. Back in the day. Yeah. Well, we missed you, Richard, last week, but...
I'm really sorry about that. They changed my flight on me a day earlier, and they just sort of find out. It's like, oh, by the way, you have to go to the airplane tomorrow.
It's not a big deal. Right. I mean, we missed you, but, you know, things happen. This is life. This is life.
I want everybody to know, like, the boondoggle that is me racing to a recording location is one of my favorite things. Like, I love the panic. You know, I should really take a picture of the mess I made to set this rig up. But
it's like my flight's leaving in 17 minutes. I better leave the house.
Yeah, that's it. I do enjoy. Somebody said that the other day. It's like most people bring guests in from all over the world. Here, the hosts go all over the world.
Stay in one place. I do. I remember once back when Google first started doing the pin in the map that you could see how close they were getting. We had a guest on one of our shows who was driving up, and we were watching him. I think it was Patrick Norton drive up the highway at high speed.
Shared his location.
It had very high speed, yeah. We are here to talk about version 23H2. Is that the current version, even though we are in 24?
Although the confusion, and actually, Richard, I'm curious what you think about this, but... the confusion here is that 22H2 and 23H2 are both on the same code base, so they get the same updates.
Yeah.
So what's the current version of Windows? You know, it's a little strange.
Well, and you know, underlying that, there is a version number that's like 5 digits long. Like, we could go dig around and look for that.
No, there is, but I have seen on my own computers, and I hear this from people routinely, where you'll have multiple PCs, one's on 22H2, one's on 23H2, but they both have exactly the same features. They all have Copilot. They've got the new widgets. You know,
is this possible? I'm on 24H2, and it's only February.
Well, you have to be in the, you must be in the inside of the program.
Yeah. Or you're in Australia.
That seems a little odd, frankly.
Yeah.
It also says my evaluation copies expires September 15th. Oh, that's because it's Insider. That's Insider.
You're on the Insider.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's an Insider build. Okay.
Yeah, so that's coming in the fall. And then before then, we're going to get a Moment 5. Not that Microsoft ever actually calls things by their names. Sometime in the spring, sometime soon.
Cool.
In fact, we already missed the first milestone. Yesterday was week D, Tuesday. That should have been the preview, non-required update version of Moment 5.
But, I'm sorry, are you still counting on the same numbering system from last year? Is that what you're doing?
I am clinging to this like Leonardo DiCaprio at the end of Titanic, knowing that I'm just going to die on this door.
You know what? Just let it. You should just be a pair of shoes on the bottom of the ocean, Paul.
I think I am
a pair of shoes. You'll be better off.
Oh, man. I had a meltdown last week because of hands-on Windows, actually, but not really because of Windows, you know? And I was telling Benito, my producer, how much I said, you know, I don't think you understand. You couldn't understand how much time I take preparing for the show, make sure everything's great. And then everything's set up. I got multiple cameras going. I was doing this really special thing. And then we connected on Zoom and everything crashed.
Of course it did.
I wasted probably 45 minutes of his life trying to fix it. And
was the correct answer just reboot the machine?
Oh, no. Listen, I wish it was this simple. I over the course of that podcast, had three different computers going. It's not worth going through. I wrote about it. It's not worth going through all the problems. Okay. Other than to say Benito is the nicest guy in the world. And aside from my wife, I don't think I've apologized to anyone more than him. And it's weird because of the amount of time I take ensuring what I'm about to do is going to be perfect and how often it isn't.
Yeah.
And anyway,
the reasons beyond your control.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I have multiple computers here and all of them are screwed up. Mm. So I reset one over the weekend, which is what I'm using now. Cause you know, I'm trying to like it to be stable and working and blah, blah, blah.
Time to pave, right? Pave it.
So everything I have,
at least you've got a box starter. Like you're pretty quick to rebuild.
Yeah. I mean,
did you see Andrew Cunningham's piece in Ars Technica on how he does a clean build?
Yeah, and I didn't appreciate that at all because I wrote that article 8 years ago and I've been updating it ever since. And I had people forwarding it to me. I'm like, yeah, no, you know, I've been right. This, he copied me. Like, what? It's in the book. You can read it for yourself.
Okay, just that.
So, yeah, I saw it and I'm not impressed.
Not impressed.
He's a good guy, but I mean,
did he at least follow the same pattern?
Not exactly, but
the big point of his actually piece was, I think, in response to Elon Musk over the weekend asking Satya Nadella for tech support,
to which I offered him my book for free because here's an idea, Google it.
So
to your question is out there.
Elon's complaint though was widely heard around the world, which is that you need an MSA Microsoft account in order to set up Windows 11. To which people in the community got, you know, notes said, no, you don't. But it isn't exactly, I mean, it's a command line.
Well, that's why, I mean, I don't understand not taking 10 seconds to Google this problem.
Yeah, he would have found it. But it's Elon Musk. He's a billionaire. He doesn't have to do that. He's got Satya Nadella's home number.
Yeah, but I don't know if you guys noticed this, but he has a habit of making these kind of bold, stupid proclamations only to be proved wrong 2 seconds later by half the planet.
And his community
knows. I don't know, maybe take a beat and, you know, look it up.
Yeah.
There's anybody who's more in need of a friend, you know?
Just needs a friend. I think you're right.
That he could yell at first before he tweeted. Like, Twitter's not your friend.
Do you want either of you? Do you want Elon to call you next time?
No.
Okay, just checking.
I mean, it's not going to be a next time. This is just a one-off. He's thrown his grenade. He's done. We're never going to hear him talk about Windows ever again.
Yeah, you're probably right.
The irony that you need a Tesla account to use a Tesla,
he wants a Starship,
a Twitter account to use a Twitter.
Yeah, that's a good point. You do need a Twitter account to use Twitter, don't you?
I mean, it's just the sheer hypocrisy of this is just laughable. It's just astonishing.
Yeah,
except that it's him, and that's what he does. Yeah. So I don't know why I'm acting.
And Andrew begins his article with that first bullet point: is how to do it without creating a Microsoft account. Mm-hmm. And it isn't something Microsoft wants you to do. It's very much a workaround.
Except Microsoft actually documents this.
Oh, they do.
Okay. Sort it out there.
Oh, okay.
It's not in the product.
Why do they make it so hard in the UI?
Because they want you to sign up with a Microsoft account. And they're for most normal mainstream users,
that's
there
what
are
they
very
want
good
to.
Reasons
yeah.
to do it.
Yeah. yeah.
You get the password authentication there. Stuff. You get automatic full disk encryption.
Yeah.
You know, it's a long list of stuff.
And you get 100 gigs of OneDrive. And like you get a bunch of stuff for signing up an MSA account.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
now I would also interest you, like, go try and sign up an MSA account today.
Why?
That's not trivial anymore either. You haven't signed up a new MSA account, I would argue, in 20 years, and neither have I.
No. Right.
So I sign up for a new one for every book. And actually, for this book, I actually signed up for two. But
what do you name it? Do you name it like Paul's next book?
No.
Do you have a special name for it?
That worked once.
The book account is just the Rod 11 book. And then I did one called MSA. What is it called?
Testing.
MSA dash account.
Oh, I don't know. MSA go away. Like, yeah, sure.
Well, because, you know, the issue is actually, Richard just alluded to this, because, you know, starting back in December, whenever that was, I started looking at all this security stuff. And most people, like 90, you know, something huge percentage of people already have a Microsoft account. And they probably have had it since Xbox went live with Xbox Live in 2002,
or they have
like
a
I did.
Hotmail or any of those things, right?
Yep. So this thing has been sitting here gathering dust. And if you were to start a new account, you would probably do it right. You know, but because you have this account sitting there and don't really think about it too much, you might use it for the one thing, for you play games on Xbox or, you know, as a secondary email address, whatever it might be. I don't think people think about it too much.
Should I create a new MSA?
No, you should just properly secure your existing MSA, which is, you know, something I added to the book and something I wrote a standalone article about because of all that work I did a couple months ago.
In short, folks, go to leanpub.com and buy.
Well, just go to throt.com. It's free. It's just, two FA is your friend. Fill out all your personal information. Make sure it's up to date. And revisit it about once a year, if not more frequently, which you won't do because you lose your phone number. You lose your secondary email address, whatever it is. You want to make sure that stuff's up to date. But again, people don't.
For people who
don't think about this
stuff. Know, MSA is just simply a Microsoft account. It's not.
Yep.
Nothing.
It's technically it's called the managed service account.
The reason
it's defined that way is as opposed to an Azure Active Directory account, now known as an Entra ID. But let's not talk about that.
I did a very special episode of Hands on Windows, which dealt with the types of accounts that you can have in Windows and all the different. It's one.
Listen, if you really, you know, have a deep dislike for your time and your happiness, take your MSA account and make it into an Azure Active Directory account.
Oh, dear God. Don't. Can we erase that part of the show?
Yeah.
Also, don't do the reverse either. Take your Enter ID account and turn it into a Microsoft account. Then get fired and watch what happens to all your purchases.
I think Richard needs to do a new show on the club Twit called Hands Off Windows. And he can do all the things you should never, do.
I would call it more like sticking something between the spokes of a wheel of a moving bicycle.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you not endoed a bike lately? Let me tell you how to do it.
You haven't lived until you've flown headfirst into a concrete wall. I'm just saying.
Hands on Windows is the wonderful show Paul does, which I'm very happy to say is now available to all. It was club only. With select episodes put out in public, but now we put all of the episodes out in public as audio, and if you want the video, join the club. But you know, some of them really want video to watch.
I was going
to
say a lot of them are,
but this one you could because you're just describing the various accounts.
The accounts, that's true.
Yeah. So if you want to hear it, it's available.
It is. It's high comedy. You'll enjoy it.
Okay.
I did one episode in the dark. I tried to do a hands-on thing with a folding laptop last week. That's when my whole setup blew up. So
we got to get you that new transparent laptop from Lenovo.
That piece of science fiction that Lenovo showed
up—the imaginary laptop.
We'll get to this. Anyway, I forgot what we were talking about, but basically, Windows has entered this new rollout phase, whose technical name is "You're getting it whether you want it." That's the name of the phase, or not. And what that means is if you qualify, your PC qualifies, you're just going to get it. You can't stop it. It's coming.
Well, you're getting the real point here, which is that they've decided you're no longer qualified to decide, which is probably correct. Well, and so they're just going to do stuff now.
I think it's tied to that thing we talked about earlier where you're on 22H2 and you could just get 23H2. And when you do, you're not going to notice any difference because if you're still running 20H2 today, you certainly have all the features already. So,
So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. No big deal. Anyway, that's just, we always discuss this phase when it happens. It happened, whatever.
I mean, I don't know. The Canary build looks compelling, like they're actually building stuff.
Yeah. So my continued problem here is that when you look at the features that end up in certain builds or channels, I guess, they're kind of all over the place. They don't follow that logical order, right? So the...
You mean last year?
Yeah. Like 16 new actions for Windows Copilot, I should have written, compared to the 13 that are available today.
Are you getting a new refrigerator put in? What's going on? What's going on in there?
Painting and new lights.
do they wait until Windows Weekly to do that stuff?
We have what time we have here, and this is what we have. So
no, that's fine. I just
awesome. Anyway, so they're adding Wi-Fi 7 support to Windows. We've known that for a long time. I think I got a laptop with Wi-Fi 7 last December. Hilariously, does not work with Wi-Fi 7 because Windows doesn't support it yet.
Yeah, but it will soon.
It will soon. And
of course, in order for that to all work, not only do you have to have a laptop that has the hardware and Windows that has the support, you need a router that has the support. And are people selling Wi-Fi 7 routers?
I have heard from more than one person that they bought two of those three things, figuring the third was already in place. And we're disappointed.
Yeah. Ubiquiti's got, if you do the instruction.
Oh, okay.
The Ubiquiti's got Wi-Fi 7 ones now. If you can find them, they sell out pretty fast.
I bet they do.
Yeah, I think so. It's just not built into Windows.
Oh, wait. I don't need it right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, you need the radio in the device, right, in your laptop. You need the OS to actually have the feature, and you need an AP that understands Wi-Fi 7. Also has the...
Yep. So it's in Canary now. That means we'll probably ship and stable in about 2 seconds, based on the new schedule. So who can say?
But you won't know when it happens. They're not going to
know when it happens. No, not even going to anticipate. It will just be there. And then remember when Copilot first shipped in Windows 11 last fall, sort of ahead of 23H2, but we'll call it part of 23H2. It was Copilot as we know it on the web, but it was also a limited set of Windows features, turn on dark mode, that kind of stuff. So they're adding more of those actions. So this thing will become a little more sophisticated, hopefully.
So more hooks into Windows for Copilot.
Yeah, and I think that's going to happen a lot more. That's not going to wait until 24H2. In fact, I'd be surprised if either one of these features waited for 24H2. So we will see, but that's my guess.
I don't know why they're not shipping this with every build. Like, why did they wait and build up 13 of them?
We're going to talk about a Copilot feature that launched with literally zero testing in about 10 seconds. So I have are many. Let's put it that way. Remember for a little while there, about a month, Canary and Dev were on the same build number.
Right.
And they've separated out again for some reason. So.
Well, because they shouldn't be the same build number for obvious reasons.
I honestly, they spun the wheel and I guess it came up snake eyes. I don't know.
I'm still waiting for the new blog post that says, hey, this is what Canary needs now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, wait 3 months.
The moment means now. Oh, no, they're learning, right? They're experimenting.
Are they learning?
Do you think, I don't know, you guys don't have much to do with normal people, but do you think,
okay,
not if you can help it.
I've seen them. I mean, I think I know what you mean by that.
I saw some walk by the other day.
The normal...
They Windows make me vaguely queasy. Yeah.
Has any idea about any of this? I mean, I was surprised to see that I'm on 24H2 because I don't even remember pressing the button that says Insider. I think we just use it and then it updates. And, the only time.
So let me throw out a random compliment to a different product. And this is going to come out of nowhere, but I think it's kind of relevant and interesting. Microsoft Edge, which I freaking hate, is on a 4-week release schedule, right? There are different channels. You can go dev, beta, whatever the names of them are. And every 4 weeks is a new version of Microsoft Edge. And it's predictable in advance what the new features are going to be. They never really surprise us. They never come out early randomly with new features. They never come out late randomly with new features. They just ship to a schedule. Maybe Windows could do that, you know? And so I don't mind. I don't begrudge Windows the desire to continually innovate, as they would put it, and ship features. But I do think it should follow a logical testing pattern that actually ensures that those features get tested to whatever degree. It doesn't have to be every 6 months. It doesn't have to be every quarter. They can ship new features every month, but I don't understand why it has to be a slap in the face surprise every time, you know? So like the stuff we just talked about, Wi-Fi 7 and these new actions for Windows Copilot, guarantee. I would bet big money. We will absolutely see those before 24H2 and well before 24H2, you know? And there's no way to know when, because, you know, Windows.
Yeah.
So I don't know
if Wi-Fi 7 supported this old, right? Like, yeah. It's been around for a while. You would have thought they would have got that out ahead of the products.
Yeah, this might be tied to what Leo just kind of asked, which is there's probably no real consumer need for it.
There's no rush. Yeah.
Although I agree that for those people that do want it, and for enthusiasts or business users that want to maybe evaluate it,
yeah,
I mean, throw it out and I guess this is how they did it. It's in Canary, so I guess you could test it that way.
Yeah, if I'm a Broadcom or, you know, any of the other radio makers, that's like, dude, that's true. I need to sell product here. Like,
The thing that's interesting about that is, you know, in the old days when Wi-Fi was still kind of a new thing and they were competing standard. Well, Wi-Fi wasn't even Wi-Fi. It was just wireless, right? Late 90s, you would buy some solution from one vendor. You'd get a card for each of your computers that could talk wirelessly. And it was kind of a, you know, Wild West type situation. And I think most people would agree. We don't want to go back to that system exactly. But then again, yeah, why can't Broadcom or whomever ship even beta drivers for Windows that are based on the Microsoft work?
I mean, these days, Microsoft basically doesn't trust any vendor to make a driver anymore. So they're doing it. But to that point, and only because empirical data has shown them when they allow that, machines get a lot less stable and they get a lot of flack for it.
I don't think my machines could get less stable, Richard. So I'm curious about that argument, but I hear it logically. I mean, it makes sense to me.
But it would make sense. But my point is, you knew what the specification was going to be well in advance. You had the chipsets a while ago.
Right.
This driver's not that complicated. It just isn't, especially when you talk about a WDL driver, like a standard driver, not even trying to use the specialized features in any way.
Right. I agree. What's the difference, though, between Wi-Fi 6E to 7? What's the throughput difference? What are we talking about here?
It'll use more antennas simultaneously. It's a better meal.
So it's an additional bandwidth range. Is that part of it?
It just, by the way, it was only officially ratified last month. I mean, it's not. It's super new.
Yeah.
But we've often adopted. The biggest thing for Wi-Fi 7, I think, is it's no longer collision-based. So that's going to make, for instance, we always tell you guys, hardwired, right? Because if there's other Wi-Fi signals, the Wi-Fi is like Ethernet will pause. And 7 apparently doesn't do that, and that's partly because of the antennas. Interesting.
Okay. So, I mean, that alone makes it interesting, I would say.
Yeah. So there are people who would want it. I mean, we would certainly encourage our hosts to use it.
There are multiple examples of computers. Apple did this, shipping with USB standards before they were completely ratified. Yeah. And I think the idea there was that they could do a firmware update if they had to, if there were differences.
But the iPhone does not have hardware support for Wi-Fi 7, so nobody cares.
That's a good point. Yeah.
In the end, it's not an iPhone. It doesn't matter.
It's not an iPhone yet.
This is the joke, right?
It's not real until the iPhone has it.
Yeah.
No, I'm
I don't understand how the hardware vendor can beat the software guy. Like, the software's supposed to be the fastest ship thing.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
How do they have hardware in the field and they don't have software out there?
I'm just curious,
Also, you know, it'll be faster, theoretically, just like Wi-Fi 6E was faster than 6, and 6 was faster than 5. It should be, they say, the standard says up to 4 times faster.
Yeah, up to 46 gigabits. I don't believe that one.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe in a lab. But.
Right, 3 feet of distance between the two nodes.
Yeah, didn't they tell me that's what 5G was going to get me to? Like,
it's 5G has slowly started to suck less. Is that fair? I mean,
I see 5G more often, but does my phone still halt on a routine basis? Sure.
I will say this doesn't happen a lot. And it hasn't happened in a while. But those rare instances where connectivity is tough, and I will actually take the moment to screw around with my phone and turn off 5G and just do 4G. It's faster. And I don't know if that's just because of whatever type of infrastructure is in that area, but this is true over by the gym I go to. It was actually happened once here.
Funny.
Depends on which carrier you're connecting to, too. That's a big witness.
One of those interesting truths for in the IoT space where it's like, you know what's awesome? 3G. because nobody's using it anymore. Yeah, antennas are still out there. The cost is incredibly low. Like it's not super low latency, but the latency is totally consistent. So for telemetry gear and IoT over 3G, it's freaking magic because nobody's bothering with it anymore.
Well, there must be time for the wireless carriers to tear it all down. that sounds like it's too good to be true. It's
absolutely on the rubble because they tore down the 2G stuff. The 2G stuff is gone.
Bring back WiMAX.
Yeah. That's it.
That's the solution.
We don't have enough WEP in our lives.
All right. Well, this was a curious digression for a canary build that isn't really that notable. But
hey, we've given it some heft. That's what we're sure here have. For. Take those sure featherweight have. Stories and give them heft.
Okay.
With context.
The wife asked me what I do in the show. It's like I mostly read Paul's articles and make fun of them. Here, as I can tell.
Yeah. Oddly, that's also what I do.
So well, somebody's got to write them. I think, Richard, we have you here for contextual heft. I think that's really. That's your job.
I'm happy that I bring a little IT angle to this too.
No, sometimes actually, we love. In all seriousness, that is really that and whiskey.
But teaching Paul truly is one of my favorite. Yeah,
me too. I enjoy it.
Anyway,
poor Paul.
Given that we've had this, we've had this capability on Pixel phones and I guess on Samsung phones recently for some months. Although I will say the Samsung equivalent of this is terrible. They're adding a kind of magic eraser type feature to the Photos app in Windows 11. And you'll be shocked to discover that your $3,000 computer can erase things from a photo just as good as your tiny little phone can. But that's good. I like to do stuff like that on the big screen. So that's kind of nice. So, you know, again, drag or circle, whatever. And
is it outpainting or no, it's erasing.
It's erasing and using it's generative erase is what they call it.
That's actually really interesting. Is that better than... Have you tried it? Is it better?
I haven't tried it yet. So in my experience, the Google feature works very good to magical. And then the Samsung one is like laughably bad. Are you kidding me? You actually ship this. It's horrific. So that will, you know, eventually I'll be reviewing that phone. That'll be a fun little part of that. But yeah,
I just the full loop back of I can have AI create pictures for me and have AI make pictures.
It creates and destroys just like a god. Exactly. Yeah, so that's it. That's all we got for Windows. There wasn't that much this week. We only had the one build last week.
And we both love Jeff Woolsey. I think that was the total qualifier.
We do both love Jeff Woolsey.
I think you did not say his name, so I'm glad to hear who you were talking about. Jeff Woolsey.
Yeah, so Jeff is a longtime Windows Server guy. When I was at Windows IT Pro, I used to deal with him regularly. I used to see him all the time. And we chat like on Twitter, which is not the same thing, but it was really neat just hearing you guys talk, and I feel bad. I haven't talked to him in so long. He's such a good guy.
And I hope folks heard last week.
Yeah,
it was actually a show about Windows Server. Sorry, I was in the air. I wasn't supposed to be.
920.
Well, I listen.
Show 920. Yeah. Runez. Go to runezradio.com. Go get it now.
And I think I would also just sort of say I cover consumer stuff, obviously. This version of Server is interesting, and I haven't been able to say that for a long time, honestly.
Yeah. Well, and I think we talked about this on the show, that's like we're finally seeing a version of Server that was built in the cloud and brought to the local machine.
I can't remember if you said this or I thought it, which is the sign of a psychopath, but it occurred to me or to you and I heard it that this kind of cloud versus on-prem thing has perhaps almost evened out. And now we understand the coexistence going forward.
Yeah.
And that this hybrid cloud thing, we have a better understanding of what those workloads might look like or maybe should look like on server rather than the on-prem part.
And you're dancing against a show I'm really looking to make right now, which is when do I take a workload back out of the cloud?
Which is fascinating, right?
That's phrase right now. That's repatriation. Yeah.
Repatriation.
What they're calling it.
Oh, boy. That's good.
I love we could digress for an hour on that. It's not a Windows conversation. It is very much a
IT
conversation.
That's very interesting. It's interesting.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a good show. I recommend it. Love Jeff.
Thank you.
Okay. Boy, this love fest must continue. But first, a word from our sponsor. You're watching Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Richard Campbell.
I really missed you guys. I just want you to know.
We missed you too.
This weekly fix is really good for me.
Is that a long flight? You went from Sydney to PV? You went home first.
I went home first. I literally stayed in an airport hotel. Wife joined me, and then we flew to PV. I did not even try and go home.
You just went to your home airport.
I went to the home airport. That's exactly it. I didn't even unpack.
That's wild.
Well, the next day. That's the weird. So I have not set foot in my home for 3 weeks now. And then I'm still 2 weeks away from setting foot in my home.
But this
and then
is
I'll for a day.
This is not a work trip. This one, your son and fun.
Well, this is, I'm working in the morning. There's a lot of writing to do and hanging out with you guys and so forth. And then mostly by the pool or
nice.
It's hard to be unhappy.
I also been home in 3 weeks, but I have not gone anywhere. Some days literally have gone nowhere.
You're in your home. By the way, I really love the drop cloth work that the guy is doing. He's sort of drop cloth things.
No, I pushed it aside. It's not necessary.
Oh, you did that. Okay.
And to be clear, if under any other circumstances, I would have stopped through Mexico City either going into this or coming back.
Yeah, of course.
That I'm literally back to back. Like I flew.
It's pretty good that you didn't, honestly, because our little volcano here is exploding right now. My neighbor was supposed to be home last night, and he got diverted and is hopefully coming home today. But we got our kids flying Saturday, and we'll see. But
pyroclastic volcanoes are no fun.
Yeah. Plus, I think there's an ancient god living in there. That's the story. I don't understand Spanish very well, but it's more than just a volcano.
Yeah. It's like we've destroyed cities before. We can destroy yours too. It's not a big deal.
He's pissed about something.
Pissed about all the expats. I hope that doesn't affect my flight into Cabo.
No, you're on the west side.
I think I'm far enough away. We're in Baja. It's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Prevailing winds are in your favor.
Yeah. Paul, you should stay down there. You should go to Mazatlan for the eclipse April 8th. You might as well just stay down there.
So we originally were planning on doing that, and we can't for a variety of reasons.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, you've seen one, you've seen them all. Sun goes out, 8 minutes later, it comes back.
Well, this one feels historic in some ways.
Short night.
You sacrifice a virgin to make the sun come back. Everything works out.
The next one's not till 2045.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I don't plan to be here in 2045.
What am I, 50? Yeah, I'm going to say, if I am, I'm not going to even know it. So
you'll make it.
I'll make it, but I won't know. I'll be drooling all over a Commodore 64 or something.
It's only 21 years from now, Paul. You'll be my age. Let's just chill. Let's relax. Yeah,
but what's 21 years in dog years? I mean, I don't know. I'm not feeling good about it.
By then, you'll have Elon's Neuralink implant in place. It'll be making you cheerful whether you want to
be. It is a race right now, at least for me, because I'm 67, between dying and getting my brain in a jar. And I'm praying.
I love that you're shooting for brain in a jar.
That's brain in a jar.
See, I think you get up to a certain age and you're like, just take me. You know?
Oh, I know. My mom's at that age. She's just, and my dad too. He said, it's fine. I've had a good life.
Yeah, I've done enough. I've done too much.
I'm really tired now. And
I was like that this morning, and I'm only 15.
Yes, I know. I feel that way. It's like, God.
I got out of bed. I'm like, I can't do it.
Get me out of here.
I don't know what's happening.
All right.
Somebody asked me, what do you miss from your youth? And I'm like, not hurting old.
I miss youth.
Oh, yeah. Let us talk about some hardware, because, of course, Mobile World Congress is going on right now in Barcelona. Wish I were there.
I wish I was in Barcelona. I don't really care about Mobile World Congress.
No, MWC, I could care less.
But yeah, Barcelona, absolutely. Yeah, a bunch of stuff here, actually. So just from a high level, I'll just say, obviously, back in December, Intel released its first Intel Core Ultra chips, which are kind of out of band with the whole Core 13, 14, 15, whatever. CES, we got a second round. We also got the non-Ultra 14th gen, which confused a lot of people. And now we're getting another round of these computers and including, I should say, the vPro versions for businesses, right? So we've kind of, I guess that's full circle. I don't know what that is on this kind of one-off mid-generation thingamajig with the MPUs and whatnot. But the big news to me was Qualcomm posted one of those comparison videos. Remember when Microsoft used to do this with Edge and they would compare it to, I don't know, Chrome and probably Firefox, and they'd have the counters going and Edge would always win, and oh, how we laughed. Well, they did one of those for AI accelerated tasks using Stable Diffusion and GIMP, generate one image and then generate multiple images. And depending on the, I guess we'll call them a benchmark or the test or whatever, I think it was like 3 to 10, the Snapdragon was 3 to 10 times faster. Separate from this, if you're, and again, like, there's some caveats here.
You're comparing two totally different chip architectures. Like it's
Stable Diffusion has been optimized for the Qualcomm chipset for a long time. They did go to the effort of making sure each piece of this was as optimized as it could be.
But ARM is also a short instruction set. Like you're literally saying, hey, I was going to make an apple pie and then I tried to make a pie with this orange and it wasn't that good.
Look, all I'm saying is, it may not be the most common real world test. You know, we use browsers and word processors and things like that, and we'll see what that looks like. But it is a workload that is comparable, and I part of it is no doubt that they've had this lead. But they used an Intel Core 7 i155H, which is not the highest end version of that chip, is a 165H.
Wouldn't have made a difference for these numbers, really.
Probably not. I think optimization is going to occur. Intel is still the world's largest producer of PC microprocessors by far, so that will happen. Now those things are out en masse. I think they were talking about hoping to have over 100 million AI PCs out in the market by the end of the year, which seems great. But for those people out there who are fans of Windows on ARM and really want this thing to succeed, I also would point out that there have been leaked benchmarks for Geekbench. And honestly, this chip's looking pretty good. And the way I described it, because I just kind of went and looked at numbers, is whatever their scores are, single and multi-core, they outperform the Ryzen 9 7940HS and the Intel Core Ultra 7 165U, by the way, just barely. But they're not just sort of in the ballpark. Like if you said, well, if there was 80% of the performance, that'd be great. No, they actually outperform both those chips. So it is very close. It's a single digit percentage close, but it's interesting. Comparing it to the Apple silicon chips, which we have to, I would say that, single core, they're comparable. Higher end M2 and M3, not so much. You know, the M3 Max outscores it by probably somewhere in the order of 30% single core, and I'm going to call this 50% actually a multi-core.
But also, another apples, oranges, and bananas comparison now. Yep. M2 and M3 are these highly integrated chips with all those different processor units inside of one bay. Intel does.
All right, that wasn't what I thought you were going to say, but I would say those are high-end, very expensive chips. And
without a doubt.
Snapdragon X Elite targets thin and light laptops, right? So This is the first of what will be a family of chipsets. There'll be higher-end versions. It in some ways is not fair to compare them head-to-head in that way. But then again, I bet the most M3s out in the world today are in laptops, right? I mean, I know they're $5,000-$6,000 laptops or whatever those things cost, but you know, it's still interesting. And you know, for some, we don't know what these are going to cost. Unfortunately, the Qualcomm stuff has been premium PC so far, but thin and light.
The brilliant play for Apple in this scenario is, oh, it's a scalar workload for a large language model. I got a processor for that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, and that's the thing, right? The advantage of it has dedicated workers for different kind of workloads, where Intel's still essentially a long instruction set pipeline, and certain workloads run brilliantly on it. And the hip and sexy ones for the moment don't.
Yep. But again, customers, I mean, those kind of arguments, like whatever, I just want the thing that's best. And the thing that's best doesn't always mean the thing that runs fastest in a benchmark. In fact, it almost never means that. But there'll be a number of factors and we'll see.
Yeah. I do think
I'm glad they're competitive.
Brilliant piece of marketing. I want Windows ARM. I'd love to have that machine. I don't know. I think it's the Windows team that's struggling to really go deep enough on getting all those instructions mapping well to really have ARM run great. It's a lot.
I think part of it is it's a different world today. It's not like Microsoft can say, we're doing this thing. Everyone's standing in line behind us and app makers like, we're good. You know, it runs an emulation. Enough. Fine. You know, we shall see. I am curious.
Yeah.
So like I said, Intel rolled out vPro versions, Core Ultra. There's not too much going on there. Lenovo shut off a transparent display on a laptop.
That was pretty.
It was pretty. Pretty fake.
Pretty fake. So influenced by sci-fi. It doesn't feel like, I mean, why would you want this?
People listening to the show might remember there was very briefly a Cortana wall-mounted thermostat that had a glass screen like that you could see through. And it was kind of neat because the display would appear to hover above whatever the wall looked like, right?
Sure.
It kind of reminded me of that, but of course that gives you my limited life view. That's
what, but we also CES, we had a few big transparent TVs there too, right?
Motorola had that, makes more sense.
Rollable. You might want to see your fireplace behind it or whatever, but your computer.
I think there's a I don't think it makes sense for a productivity laptop necessarily.
No.
But I do think there's a market for TVs and I would call them desktop displays where
here's an argument
ambient thing. Okay.
One of the things I was dealing with when we were working hard in product teams is that whoever was on the laptop sitting in the meeting room wasn't effectively in the meeting. They were behind their laptop.
And that's what you're saying. Okay.
Right. It was kind of isolating. And so you've got folks debating, but the person behind the machine is sort of somewhere else. And so we started using tablets. We laid the machine flat down so that you could draw on it so that it was less in your face. And I wonder if the transparent screen is the in-between of that.
Well, the problem with the tablet, though, is you're also got the people who were doing this thing where they were like,
yes,
you know, like drawing on the thing and not really.
So if it was transparent, I was sitting and was sitting across from you. Transparent screen in front of me. Like, am I?
Do you think the transparency would come through the back and you could be like, Bob, you're what, looking at porn during the meeting? What are you doing?
Absolutely. I see that as a feature. I'm taking notes about how much of an idiot you are. And you, if you can read backwards, you'll be able to read them.
Well, I do think there's a market for this kind of thing because I think there's a place for ambient surround imagery around, if you're watching a movie where maybe it's lights that kind of play on the wall that bleed into the picture. Same thing with video games on computer displays. And maybe this kind of thing, you know, it's maybe it's in that area. It's interesting. I don't know how far we are away from actually having something like this that makes sense as a product. I don't, they also did the thing where they had the transparent glassing on the keyboard deck and the keyboard was sort of virtual and guys, no, like absolutely not. I think we all know that ship has sailed.
Yep.
So it was. I think they just wanted something.
Now that you can make them, we look for the device. Like, you know, what about in the phone? So the bottom part of the phone maybe has the hard gear in it, but the screen is transparent.
That was also remember Microsoft used to do those Office of Tomorrow demo videos where the woman would run, you know, from the futuristic car to the futuristic hotel. And those videos, the phone was a slab of see-through glass. Like literally that was the.
And I would speak to the old cell phone. I can't remember who made that particular one. That was the folding one that looked like the communicator from Star Trek. Like
the Danger. Danger phone, whatever it was called.
Danger was one of them. There was, I think it was a Motorola version of it, but it's like,
that's right.
They were emulating sci-fi, and this is emulating sci-fi, but you know what? It's cool.
Hey, we got our best ideas from Isaac Asimov. This is all good.
And Star Trek, and you know, there's a reason for this stuff. That would be cool to have the transparent phone.
I guess so,
I guess it depends what you give up. You know, it's not going to be as beautiful a display.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but you know, it's certainly it makes AR easier.
Hey, you thought you lost your phone easily? Now wait until they're transparent. You're in a dark bar, and it's fallen into. Anyway, so there are actual announcements. We're not so exciting. New ThinkPads. Not that new ThinkPads aren't great, but these are the AI PC, so UltraCore based ThinkPads, all very good. And they announced some software with Motorola Mobility, right? That part of Motorola they still own. And it's just another version of let's interact between the PC and the phone, like we have with PhoneLink, like Intel has with whatever that Intel thing is called. So they're doing that too. And okay, fine. That's fine. I guess PC makers want to have some kind of different. I don't know that it will be limited to their PCs, but I bet it will. Dell did that when they had their thing.
They just want to have fun,
You want to have a differentiation. I mean, that's what they're doing. HP brought the Intel Core Ultra to their Pavilion and Envy lines, which is their consumer lines, consumer and consumer, I would call it consumer prosumer in the case of Envy. So good, you know, whatever. 16 by 10 displays, blah, 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 whatever. And then the Samsung Galaxy Book 4, which was announced at CES, is now available in the US. You can buy those now. This is a series of computers. There's actually, I think, four different models. These are the ones that were the first to come up with the Copilot key. Remember, that was the big announcement. And they have the unique, because it's Samsung, right? They have a unique Copilot feature that no one else gets because of their partnership with Microsoft. Now, to use that, you have to have other Samsung devices, which I think a lot of Samsung guys might. But in the same way that Samsung flagships get additional, you know, features in PhoneLink, they also get additional features in Copilot if they have a Samsung flagship phone and a Samsung Book 4 series laptop. I know. I don't know how I feel about that. Not good, basically. I don't like that kind of thing. And then, oh, so this is not even slightly related, but I'll call it semi-related. Microsoft today, out of nowhere, announced their kind of event schedule for the whole year. We already knew that Build was coming in May to Seattle. Still don't know if press is going to be invited. But Microsoft Ignite will be held in Chicago on November 18th to the 22nd. This is the first time Ignite has been held in person outside of Redmond area or Seattle area since 2019 when it was in Orlando.
Right.
So 5 years.
And there was one ticket in Chicago, and as I recall, it was a train wreck.
I don't even remember that. One of the weird facts of history here is that Microsoft Ignite is an annual show, right? This used to be TechEd. Mm-hmm. When the pandemic happened in 2020, they did a show that November, like they always do. But then they did a second Ignite in the spring, I think in March maybe or April.
Yeah.
And then they did Ignite again normally. I don't know why they did that.
There was pressure to have one brand of event.
Okay.
And they decided Ignite was more important to Build. Like there's always competing interests on all of this, right? Like,
yeah,
sure. Remember, it used to be PDC and tech, and PDC used to be for professional developers, and then it became more of a futures conference, you know, going all the way back to .NET.
Well, they rolled in a bunch of stuff. I remember Mix used to be a separate show just for web developers, and then it was web developers and phone, and then
spun up later, right? Yeah. Like, okay. The old PDC was older than that, right? Yeah. And then they did .NET before .NET was shipped. And then they did Longhorn. Woo. And then they last PDC was 2010. The first Mix was 06, but that was them trying to figure out how do we be open web people.
Yeah.
And that's where they did all the web-related stuff and tried to change culture that way.
Why don't they just do everything in Redmond?
There's nowhere to put them.
There's not a lot of infrastructure, yeah.
Okay.
And even the Seattle Conference Center is not that big.
I do think there's a nice case to be made for rolling back things to the way they were before, because they consolidated down to basically three major shows, because Inspire is the partner show. And they used to have a lot of smaller shows. They would have Exchange or SharePoint-specific shows.
WinHack.
I think that could still make sense.
Ignite was the consolidation of TechEd and a bunch of other smaller Microsoft
shows. Yeah.
Maybe they also, maybe business travel, since it's dying off, except with you two. Maybe they realize that they can't have too many, you know, they're just not going to get the attendance that they would like if they have too many.
It's going to be a while. I mean, I do think it's going to, I think it's going to be a slow boil. We'll see.
Now, I have to say, Chicago has is like Goldilocks zone. You really don't want to be there in August. I know, because the McCormick Center
CES. Late November might not be great.
Yeah, I'm thinking it might be.
The last, they were supposed to do two Ignites in a row there, and the first of those two was so bad, they broke the contract and left. And people got food poisoning.
Oh,
like, just really bad. The infrastructure was terrible. Like, everyone was staying at hotels downtown. But to get out to that conference, was it McCormick? McCormick?
Yeah.
To get out there, it was like a 30-plus minute ride in traffic. I got into a yelling argument with a cab driver who I explained what I was doing, and he took the fare. And then he asked me if it would be okay to, you know, instead of going through the madness of the half circle in front of it, if it could drop me off. And I said, of course. And then he just yelled at me, because he had to drive home for 40 minutes in traffic, and he wasn't going to get a fare. And I was like, I just gave you a huge tip. It raised a lot of anger, you know, at the time. And
it became really hard to get a cab, right? Like,
yes. Oh my God, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, much went wrong. Like, yep. It was quite astonishing.
I'm just worried about the weather.
One time, I mean, actually.
Chicago can be awful.
You know what, though? Global warming has solved this problem.
Well, maybe
we're going to have a beautiful spring-like weather. The cherry blossoms will be out.
Or we'll have a hurricane, one or the other.
Or, or the volcano we don't know exists is going to explode. And yep. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm just glad to see this stuff winding up again, I guess I'll call it. But man, seriously, what is it? We're closing in on the five-year anniversary. Oh, I guess it's the four-year anniversary of the COVID thing. And then, you know, it will be 5 years since the last major in Microsoft backyard in-person Ignite. It's exciting.
Last year, it was above freezing and cloudy most of November. So
okay. Above freezing. Yeah.
But above freezing, just.
You're speaking as a Canadian.
Yeah. That's
I'm doing great. That so I don't have to explain it to Freedom Unit, right? Like, I'm
good. It's above freezing. All right. Do you want to move on or do you want to talk more about the good old days?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
I know that was mean. You're watching Windows. I enjoy the history, the context. The reminiscence, the fights with the cab drivers. Mm-hmm. Our show today brought to you by, well, I don't know. We'll find out. Somebody said, you know, there was a hefty garbage bag ad that sounded like the worst AM radio ever. Yeah, I apologize. If you don't like it, there is a way around it. Join the club. You won't hear any of this. Not any of the inserted ads. Not any of our ads. You won't even hear this plug for Club Twit. It's all edited out. And and the other advantage of it is there's no trackers. You know, I was talking about this the other day. Big agency, won't say the name, but there's a big agency that has said to us, well, you got to use why are you doing it this way? You got to use our trackers in your feed. They call them pixels, but they're really just
pixels. It's
fun.
It's like a little pixel fairy dust.
But what it is is the feed goes through a variety of servers on the way to you. We already do that with one company and provide that for advertisers. We know, because we know this company, we know there's privacy forward. They're not sharing information with the advertisers or with us, et cetera, et cetera. So we do one of those, and then we have our own, and we go through AdvertiseCast. So they want more. They say, well, no, you got to have this one and this one and this one. And there are, by the way, there are podcasts you can listen to. I won't name names, but they have maybe half dozen of these or more. Every one of them is, you know, kind of gathering information on you. So we said no. And they said, well, we're going to pull at least one of your big advertisers. So we said, okay. But the truth is, every time you add a tracker, we have to tell our audience not to block it, because a lot of them are blocked by ad blockers. We have to explain. Our audience doesn't like it. We're not going to do it. So we do have minimal number of trackers, but we have trackers in them, because otherwise we'd have no ads. But the best way around all of this, and the way that helps us because we just lost a bunch of advertising from this agency, is to join the club. $7 a month, that's all it is. You get great stuff like Paul's Hands on Windows. You get the full in color video of Hands on Windows, Hands on Macintosh, iOS Today. All of those are available for audio in public with ads, but ad-free in video if you want it. Plus the great Club Twit Discord, wonderful place to hang. You don't have to join the Club Twit Discord. In fact, you don't have to even listen to the ad-free versions. There are people who like the ads. The only point of this, from our point of view, is we need the support. So if you like what you listen to, if you listen to more than one show on the network every week, if you're an active listener, I think it's worth the $7. I hope you do too. And we really hope you'll join Club Twit. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/clubtwit. You'll see all the benefits. You'll have a chance to join either monthly. And by the way, monthly is probably the way to go. Doesn't cost you any less to go yearly. And with monthly, you can cancel at any time. You're right. You just go, well, I don't want to pay for it anymore. So if you're at all worried, try it monthly. There is a yearly plan. You can give more if you wish. It's not a charity. You can't put it on your taxes as a deduction. But if you wish to make it $10 or $20 a month, you by all means, we'll be glad to support that. There's a company of corporate plans and family plans too. twit.tv/clubtwit. If you like this show, And by the way, the money doesn't go into my pocket. It goes to Paul, to Richard. It goes to the gas company, the electric company, the rent for the studio, the staff. That's where that money goes. So you're supporting, directly supporting the ongoing production of these shows. And thanks in advance. Paul Theriot, Richard Campbell, they're both in Mexico. It's a amazing coincidence. Let us continue talking about AI. And I want to assure you, before we get into this, all three of us are mostly real. So just have no fear.
Me increasingly less so, but yeah.
Some of us are more digital than others.
Right. So I felt like this next thing warranted a major announcement from Microsoft, and I'm a little bit confused by this because Microsoft has talked about Copilot, of course. It's talked about how we're going to be able to make our own custom Copilots at some point using this Copilot builder or GPT builder, whatever they're calling it.
I'm putting those sessions together right now for DevInt in May for exactly that reason.
But they never really talked up this aspect of it, which is that you could go to copilot.microsoft.com and enter and say, draw me a picture, make me a story, blah, 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 whatever. But you can actually make, there's different language here. Microsoft is using the Copilot language, I believe. And I guess they're saying GPTs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not saying custom GPTs. They're calling them Copilot GPTs, right? Which are the equivalent of OpenAI, ChatGPT, custom GPTs, right? Which is an LLM that's trained for specific purposes, right? And mm-hmm. and in many ways, this is our first peek at what I'll call, for lack of a better term, an AI app, if you will, right? So they have one for travel, right? Or one for cooking, one for images, which was already around, and then one for fitness trainer, right? And the idea here is that this GPT/chatbot or whatever, you, instead of going right to Copilot, you go to this other thing, and then hopefully the results could be more accurate/reliable because you're not going across the whole body of
fewer hallucinations, right? Like, yeah. I don't like the term, but what's the upside to reducing the language set? Less weird responses, more, fewer bugs, and less cost for them to operate because it's smaller.
Yeah, right? I think this is kind of the future of this stuff. You know, it's weird. AI has followed a weird trajectory. Like, we got the Holy Grail first, and then we start, we're moving it down.
Because it was an accident, right? Like, they did basically stumble onto this thing. They were still experimenting with it in November 22, and they put it out to the world because they'd run out of money to do more testing themselves. It's like, let's go test on the public. What a great idea. Now they're tuning it. Like, I've seen this everywhere. We're seeing this in Home Assistant now, where folks are coming up with ways to run it on a Raspberry Pi by reducing its set, its length, and its overall. Really? Okay.
So no, I believe it. But I think this is, we won't really think in these terms in about 3 months. But for now, there's this notion that we're going to have these very specialized LLMs that are will do a specific thing. And we'll be better at it than this overlord AI, for lack of a better term. This is fascinating to me, and I wish they had talked about it more.
This is exactly the same thing that happened with data analytics back in the day. You made the great cube of doom, right? You combined all of the data. It cost a fortune to run. It was slow, and it was odd. And then you learned to shave down relevant data sets into small units that cost less to operate and ran faster. And you're seeing the same essential effect that we've hit that tipping point on how to make a language model work. And we're finding reasons to narrow it for applied places. But it also speaks to, because this isn't a path to AGI, this is a path to language modeling. And so let's get specific on the models of language we want.
Right, right. That's very interesting. This was discovered through a tweet. they didn't announce it.
Not advertising.
I'm shocked by this. This is one of the biggest evolutions or improvements or whatever to this product since it was released. I think this points very much at where this is going. I think it's fascinating.
It's what maturation looks like. You build and you build until you have something useful, and then you shave away the fluff to get to the product that matter. Okay.
It's just that this time it happened in real time, I guess.
I mean, they've been talking about this for a while, and so they're getting smarter about building narrower models. Because you get better quality and it costs less to operate. If you're going to build a tool that depends on language specific to travel and you have a choice between running, OpenAI's big ChatGPT 4+ engine at 20 cents a transaction, or you can run the travel bot at half a cent a transaction.
I know.
Which one are you going to buy?
Exactly. That's the right. But you know what? We don't have to be like kind of cynical about it, because it actually benefits everybody. No, right?
It is maturation, right? Yeah. If you look at every technology, after you get to discovery, then you tune, right? Like, it's pretty normal. So what the nice thing here is, like, we're not racing to a GPT-5. We're going the other way, where people are the most valuable parts and narrowing in, and that is healthy.
Yeah, right. And then I guess in the same vein of smaller LLMs or SLMs or whatever, and you know, Google last week, remember, came out with their Gemma kind of open, lightweight AI models. Microsoft this past week has. Well, actually, Microsoft has their own too, by the way, but Microsoft has partnered with Mistral. I assume it's Mistral, like that, a French-based AI company.
Sure.
To bring this stuff into Azure AI Studio, Azure Machine Learning, et cetera, et cetera. It'll be one of the AI models you'll be able to choose from as a Microsoft customer. It was also probably done to head off regulatory criticism of their partnership with OpenAI, frankly. But again,
partner with more people.
Yeah. We're not exclusive. Although I would say a $13 million multi-year investment in Mistral AI is not quite $13 billion, but they have similar numbers. Anyway, so that's cool. And then as soon as they announced it, the EU said, okay, thank you for doing that. We're going to investigate this now. Which, you know, we've talked about this. They should be doing that. Yes.
It's worth scrutinizing. Look for exclusivity clauses. Like, what don't we know?
Yep. Yeah. Look for anything anti-competitive.
Yeah. Yep.
GitHub announced GitHub Copilot Enterprise. So this is their third SKU of GitHub. I'm sorry, Copilot, right? So they have GitHub Copilot
Individual. The
original Copilot, the first Copilot. Yep. $10 per month. Copilot for Business is $19 per user per month. And then this one, obviously offers everything from the other two and expands on that, is $39 per user per month. And this also speaks to this notion of, in this case, kind of institutional knowledge and, training it on the company's data. Yeah.
Well, one would also argue institutional standards.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Coding standards, everything. Mm-hmm. Yes. The whole thing. Yeah. So interesting.
I've got a couple angles on this, both as a dev and my IT roles as well, which is you definitely want your enterprise architects having an overview of how Copilot's used in the organization, what we tend to present, code styles that we want, so forth. So it tends to lead people the right way. So you're not resisting Copilot's output in your review. So it'll slow you down.
But it's also AI, so it'll just fix it after you leave it anyway. Just submit it, and we'll.
AI can't help you if your standards suck.
Yep, exactly.
In general, Microsoft needs to push towards more enterprise features in this space. You know,
I have to say, I mean, I don't know what the market is for individual developers, but $9.99 a month is such a good deal for that product. Price, yeah. Inside of a professional organization of multiple developers working in teams, it's probably fine.
You save one dev 1 hour per month. There's your $39 payback many times over.
Yep. Because on the outside, that seems expensive, but you gotta remember who's using it and how.
And what the effects are. Like, I'm talking to PMs these days who are just saying like a 30 to 40% performance improvement in coding once they get familiar with Copilot.
Right.
It's more code of higher quality, less remediation, less bug fixing, that sort of thing, and quicker fixes when they do need to make a difference. So yeah, the math is pretty compelling there, and it could be much more expensive than that and still be worthwhile for a lot of places.
Google continues to step on the rake, which I sort of appreciate.
It also annoys me too.
It blows my mind. There's two sides to this one. So they have a product obviously called Gemini, which is also the name of their LLM families or product lines, whatever.
Is there a third name for it now?
Well, they've rebranded around. So Bard has rebranded to Gemini. What used to be called, Duet. is also, everything's Gemini. So they've gone Gemini. That's good. They've had their co-pilot moment.
Yep.
Gemini, like co-pilot, has image generation capabilities, which actually doesn't now, because in an attempt to be responsible and ethical, they overcompensated, and their image generation capabilities were creating horrifically bad images. I'm not sure how else to say it, but
I would also say, look at the prompt.
Well, there's always that aspect to it, but I've been, I've tried to have Copilot generate certain imagery where it was like, yeah, we're not doing that. No. Nuclear explosions. Although
there's certain obvious words that you just say no to.
Yeah.
Yeah. In this case, though, it was like, show me some historical pictures of the Pope, and they were black. And I think,
honestly, and it was trying to be inclusive.
I think, honestly, this is the right wing getting upset about wokeness in a weird way.
No, they obviously overcompensated, but
yeah. But so what? I mean,
I know.
You didn't say show me a picture of the current Pope. It was just some popes. Or I can't remember what the other ones were, but
no. And they literally said, if you said, I want a picture of a black woman doing, running through a field or whatever, it would not have created an image of a white woman, because you specifically asked for this. Right. Well, so it's trying to be diverse, and
they're trying they overcompensated for the idea that it would only be white people that it would show.
Exactly. But they didn't want it to look like a thing made by middle-aged white guys. Right.
You can't attribute wokeness or any, I mean, this is,
I don't.
This
well,
is
I don't
the
know
same mistake that people make about AI in general. They're anthropomorphizing it. It's just a generation machine. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't. I mean, I honestly, the thing to me that's interesting is Google. Ever since Microsoft exploded out of the gate with what we now call Copilot, Google has been saying, "Excuse me, we've been doing this for several years.
Yeah,
we see the ethical issues here." We're going to do this responsibly. And this is not, it's weird how these roles have sort of reversed in a way.
It's weird.
Because this gives them a teaching moment where they can say, I mean, it was their product, but they can still say, look, this is what we were warning you about. We knew that this was possible. We tried to overcome it and we overshot it.
I mean, OpenAI came from Google Brain for the most part, right?
Yeah.
What spawned OpenAI was what was happening in Google Brain, and a lot of talent, including Susquehanna and others, was pulled into OpenAI in the process. So, this is the funny thing. They could respin this and say, this is what you were warning us about. This is why they made it.
That's not very good marketing, Richard. It's interesting. I mean, obviously, we'll come back any day now, in 2 weeks, whatever it is. They can't not have this capability.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of road bumps like this. And,
how did they miss this, and how did Microsoft not miss it? Like, really? Is it just better beta testers? Like, really?
There are insane versions. Like, there's a cottage industry now, and people trying to get just the right prompt to make one of these things go nuts. And there's a great, I wish I could find this right now, but there's a great conversation where the guy says, listen, I have PTSD. If I see an emoji, it's going to set it off. And then the thing goes Bond villain on him. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I would never do anything to hurt you. Oop. Oh, I put an emoji there. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean that. I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm so sorry. Oh, there's another one. I don't know why they keep appearing like that. Actually, I'm doing it on purpose. I'm evil, and I don't care that you have PTSD. Like, it goes down this, like, crazy. It gets nuts, like, immediately.
Yeah, and you're anthropomorphizing a piece of software again, but okay.
That's the point, is these safeguards that, are being built in, they're going to, it's a constant battle, because people, anthropomorphs, I mean, people, it's people who are coming up with this. Like, it's people who
provided the data in the first place.
How far do you, I mean, I don't mean to say they pushed the AI, but I mean, because, but you see this in the comment sections of blogs and things, like, where people goad and goad and goad, and then finally the guy explodes and you're like, see, you're a jerk, you should be kicked out of here. And it's like, hold on a second. And I think a lot of this stuff is people who are like, let's be a little devious here and see what we can make this thing do. And, and then we can talk about the evil of AI, even though we're the ones that, went down this path very explicitly.
Yeah. Poked it. If you keep poking it hard enough, and admittedly, it should be able to resist.
Yes. And since Google never learns their lesson, they also put help me write right into Google Chrome. So now we can all use AI to write our product reviews online or comment on blogs or write emails, whatever the heck it's going to be. It's still an experimental feature.
Does it always open with the sentence, you know, normally it's against my programming to write a review like this, but?
No, usually what it says is, it looks like you're trying to write a ransom note. Would you like me to help? You know, something like that. I don't know. I don't actually get to see it because I'm in Mexico. It's not here. So I can't even access any experimental features right now. So
where's your VPN?
I have tried. I feel like I think I, yeah, anyway, I've tried, but I haven't gotten it to work. And then, you know, in the opposite end of the spectrum, Brave, which is busy trying to create their own AI out of their own, you know, non-gigantic company stolen data set. Trying to be the good guy, small. They're slowly evolving Brave Leo in their browser. And this is something like, I don't turn on sidebars. I don't usually use these in-browser things, but I've actually started using this. And I have to say, if you agree maybe that one of the best uses of AI for a normal person these days is like summarization, you know, pulling out the big points and kind of creating a bulleted list. Honestly, for that kind of thing, it's not horrible. And now it directly supports PDFs and files in Google Drive, right? And this is the start of some, you know, series of integrations that will come out.
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting, right? Yeah. I mean,
the idea, I've got a set of docs that was supposed to rerun Google Drive right now. If I fired up Bravely, I could literally just say, give me a summary of that doc.
Yes. And I was just playing with this capability last night. I was looking at like chapters of the book, for example, or documents or longer articles I've written. You know, what are the key points here? Mm. Honestly, it's pretty good. It's pretty bueno, as we said.
It's not just writing summaries. Paul is angry at something.
Yeah. Wow. Paul's ranting again. Skip forward to paragraph 37. There's a joke there you might like. And then you're pretty much done. Yeah, you know, a lot of it is just fluff. Yeah. Word has long had a document summarization feature, and I used to joke that if you took a Satya Nadella speech and put it in there and had it summarize it down, it would just come up with a blank document because he never really said anything. Yeah, terrible.
The world's going to be great. It's going to be great. Everything's going to be great. We're all great.
Well, he's proven his worth, that's for sure. I don't know that GDC was not in person last year, but it is going to be in person this year. This is the Game Developer Conference. So it's coming to San Francisco in late March. Microsoft or Xbox will be there. In fact, they have dozens of people speaking at the show. You should look at the list of some of the talks. Really interesting. Like if you want to...
He was in Moscone last year, so...
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. So maybe, I'm not sure if this represents like an escalation of their presence, but they're going to have a lot of speakers from across Xbox. So Activision, Blizzard, King, ZeniMax, et cetera. So interesting. The one I'm going to keep my eye on is there's a DirectX State of the Union, which includes information about that DirectSR feature I think we talked about last week, which is Windows will soon have the ability to upscale games using AI, right? Older games. Really, really interesting. So that might be good. Also, there's a bunch of Diablo 4 sessions, which is kind of funny because it's, you know, that's been out, right? But it's, they're going to be talking, you know, you can go and learn how developers did different parts of each game or whatever. It's kind of a, it seems like kind of a fun show, actually.
Ooh.
I don't remember when this was, but sometime last year, Microsoft was talking about game hubs in the Xbox interface. This was on consoles. And the idea there is you have kind of a, like you would have in the store, like a landing page for a game. And then you see all the add-ons and it's like a central place. If there's a community around that game, et cetera, et cetera. That's been around for a little while now, but now they're adding it to Xbox app on the PC. So that's still in pre-release, but it doesn't seem like a very difficult computer science program. So problem rather. So they'll probably get that going quickly. And Age of Empires, which is a game I've, well, it's a series of games.
Around for ages.
It's been around for 30 years, maybe. I mean, maybe 30 years, maybe somewhere there. Not my kind of thing, but this is going to be a big year if you're a fan. Some of the stuff they had announced before, we have a little more details. Like there's a new game called Age of Mythology Retold that's coming out and will ship in 2024 on Xbox consoles and PCs. There's a mobile version of Age of Empire coming out, which makes tons of sense to me. No exact date, but coming soon to Android and iOS. And then a bunch of DLC for most of the previous games, 2, 3, and 4. coming out at different times, lots of sales, you know, blah, blah, blah. And because it is the, because they're celebrating the milestone of having reached 50 million players worldwide, which I assume they mean across games, across time, right? So 50 million people have played some Age of Empire game over the past whatever number of years. Through the 29th, almost everything Age of Empires related is on sale. And that's true in both the Microsoft Store and Steam.
And you've not been a big, you didn't get into Age of Empires, you're not an RTS guy, not your thing?
No.
That's interesting.
No.
I mean, because it's basically building a world, right?
Yep.
And sometimes with some historical context, sometimes not. It's not even important.
The last game I played like this was the Seven Cities of Gold. It was an Electric Arts game for the Commodore 64 that probably came out in like 1985 or something.
And listen, I don't know how many mobile games you play, but mobile games for the most part are free to play, pay to win.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're so big, and this is why I've been saying all along, like Microsoft's going to have a tough time in the mobile market because it's creepy, right? It's exploitive.
Have you looked at Windows 11 recently? I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah,
I think they got it. You know,
don't care. It's like, you know what would be cool if they sold the PC version of Game of Age of Empires, and you could have the mobile version as well.
Oh,
and it didn't have any pay things in it, and it wasn't multiplayer. Like you could just play the game on your phone; it'd be a good game on your phone.
I don't know if that's what it is or not. Actually, so no, I'm not really. I don't
because we're all about recurring revenue, and so I'm going to use Skinner boxes to deceive you into needing things you don't really need to play a game.
There, hypothetically, if this company produced a product that was repetitive and but drew you in and you got kind of an addiction to it, and then they sold you the cure to that addiction, would that be bad? is that a problem?
No, it'll be bad for them because once you cure,
it wouldn't actually be a cure. It would just be enough to keep you going, like a drip.
Placate your moments so you could buy again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the Skinner box mindset, right? Yeah, it's the gambling addiction.
To the industry's credit, I would say different companies have tried to sell games, just sell games, you know, just do it the old fashioned way. And I think tied to the problem we see with advertising and everywhere. And, you know, people just expect everything to be free now, you know?
Yeah. And so you can't charge $30 for a mobile game.
Nobody stinks, right? Because if you have an iPad or probably an Android tablet, maybe, I don't know. You have this machine that's as powerful as a PC in some ways, not every way, but super high resolution screen, right? You can take it with you. I mean, there's so many advantages to it, but we're so used to just, you know, we sit there playing the game in a tiny window by a bunch of ads.
I've been playing a mobile game now that's very much a pay to win kind of game, and it's got a PC client and tablet client and so forth on it. And I'm just exploring the culture of it and trying to figure out, like, how sick is this? Like, you know,
it's sick. I think it's
pretty sick. And it's like, how can a kinder, gentler tech giant just dive into this one? Oh, wait, you're selling tracking information. So, I guess
I mean, though. I think it's in their wheelhouse.
One category versus another.
They've been building to this moment, you know.
Plus, until it legislated against it, right? The way the EU did with FIFA for kids, at least.
Sure. Yeah, no, there have been attempts and successes getting rid of the loot box syndrome thing and doing that kind of thing. But I don't know, even something like, I use Duolingo for language learning. We pay for Duolingo Pro or whatever the hell it's called, you know, for annual, whatever it is. And then sometimes you run out of, you know, there's all these stupid little gamification things. Like you don't beat the timer and you'd have to stop off, but you can spend some money and get some gems and continue. And
if you're not learning well enough, you can pay to keep learning.
Yeah. So I've done that. I mean, it's, it's like being able to pay. You got a C in class. You're like, here's $10. All right. You got a B, you know, like, I don't know. I mean,
very interesting.
Right? Yeah.
The drive for recurring revenue.
I know. But, you know, Microsoft seems some success with that stuff and also seen some issues, right? With games like maybe Sea of Thieves, I'm not saying this has been a problem necessarily, but they support it for a long period of time. And there isn't necessarily an ongoing revenue model there, unless you're talking about people who are in Game Pass and
they
understand the math of that.
If they gave us if it was just a flat rate, if it was just Game Pass and you got mobile games, they could wipe the market out. They could own it all.
Yeah. Well, you've just invented Apple Arcade and Google Play Games. I mean, both Android and iOS have that.
Well, except for one thing. Xbox at least. By the way, PlayStation 2, though, they don't do this either. They have the games, right? If you ever look at Apple Arcade, like a normal, fully grown adult would look at this selection of games and be like, what is this nonsense? Or, you know, Play Pass, whatever it's called on the Google side, same thing. It's like, what is this? You know, like, I don't want to play these games. Now, there are people who do, right? I mean, obviously, everyone likes different things, but...
Yeah, but Age of Empires on a mobile device.
Oh, my God, yes.
Play, it'd be fun.
We must have talked about this at some point over the past 2 weeks. Maybe it was last week when you weren't here, but it is inconceivable that Microsoft is not right now working on a Game Pass mobile. It's inconceivable.
It's so logical. And it is the one good product they could make from that stack and not be in the exploitative model.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And we'll see. We'll see if that works. But as part of a Game Pass Ultimate subscription, where you had everything, right? PC, console, and mobile. That's where it gets really exciting. I mean, I think that's very interesting. And mobile devices can play really modern games. I mean,
they've got the horsepower for it. And the idea that you maybe are building a world, you play on your PC for a while, and then you've got to, you know, ride to school. And so you flip over to your mobile app and play another part of the game on your mobile phone.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to worry about building that new wing on my civilization when I get back to the big screen.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of models there. You could have side quests that made sense on that device in a game that, you know,
and that's an even better idea that there's aspects of the game can only be played on mobile.
We will see that kind of innovation, and people are going to try. Like, they'll try things. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
of course it is. I said it out loud, so it must be genius. And then finally, we've probably heard of GeForce Now, which is a series of tiers of game streaming services. These are PC games that you can play on different devices. There's been a free version for a while. Obviously, you don't get bumped to the top of the list when it's time to get online. But now, because people are sitting there waiting to play who aren't paying, they're going to start showing them ads. And, you know, taking that face value, I don't really have a problem with that. What do you expect for free? But there are already charges of people like, you know, it used to take me 2 minutes to get into a game and now it takes 6 minutes and there are ads the whole time. It's like, seriously? And so I don't know what to say to that. I haven't used
that's good pre-roll recently.
Yeah.
They're not incented to get you into game fast anymore. No, they're making money when you're not in the game.
That's right.
Tough reverse incentives.
All right.
We got a big back of the book coming up in just a bit. You're listening to Windows Weekly with Mr. Paul Thurrott. He's in Mexico City. His website, Thurrott.com, continues on. And by the way, I don't know if you're seeing on the Discord.
I love them.
All of the things over your shoulder that they're putting.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of over the over-the-shoulder things, honestly.
Just put a hook there. That's
enough. Yeah, put the hook back. It's a hook. Pause it.
Been played out.
I don't know how are we on hour 20 and at the back of the book? What's going on?
I don't know what happened. It's amazing. We want to get you to the beach is what we want to do.
Yeah.
That's Richard Campbell.
Is it only been an hour
in Puerto Vallarta? It's a short show. Well, that's okay. It's not unheard of.
Nope. It's been a while, though.
This decade, but yeah, it's not unheard of.
Right. Remember?
Back in the day.
We used to do audio only. You probably don't remember that.
Back of the book time. Let's get started with Paul's tips and picks.
Yeah, one of the issues, I was going to say little issues, it's a big issue that I run into updating the book is it's hard to know when things happen in Windows now. You know, you used to have, here's a bunch of new features. It's not really like that anymore. So now things just happen. So at some point they were, you know, for example, they were testing it. Microsoft was the, let's move the Copilot button to a different part of the taskbar. And then one day it was just there for everybody. And it, unlike the, you know, a year and a half ago when I was complaining about the three different versions of OneDrive, which continued to be a problem for a very long time, this one seems to have just sort of happened. It's just out there. And tied to this is a very exciting feature that has nothing to do with Copilot, or rather with widgets, the original Copilot, because this piece of junk, if you ever go in there, they have this Microsoft Start feed, and it's all these horrible stories, and you could make a career, if you could get paid doing it, out of trying to fine-tune this thing to only show you good stories. You can't do it. It's not possible. And it doesn't matter what the stories are because Microsoft is licensing the content. When you click on it, Microsoft Edge loads. It goes to the Microsoft Start website or MSN.com or whatever it is. You get Microsoft advertising and tracking. It's like the most horrible thing on earth. And from day one, people have said, why can't I just turn that off and just have the widgets? It only took 3 years, but now it's there. And you should, if you're going to use widgets at all, I leave widgets on because I like having the temperature thing in the in the corner there. I changed two features now. I've always changed one. The one I've always changed is open widgets on hover. I turn that off. I don't want my mouse to errantly go down there and have widgets just open on me. I never want that. But now there's a new option, show or hide feeds. And the Microsoft Start feed is the only one in there. And you can turn it off. And now you just have widgets, just like you would think of something called, wait for it, widgets. Someday, maybe, there will be third-party feeds. There's a link to it. It will bring you to an empty store in the Microsoft, an empty page, rather, in the Microsoft store. Third parties can plug into this. And maybe someday we'll have a good third-party news choice. But we don't today. But for now, the tip is you can just turn those things off. When you do, the widgets get bigger. They take up more space. It's kind of nice.
That's interesting.
I can see that my air quality is very unhealthy today. That's good. And I'm going to turn that off because I don't need to know that. So that's in there. And then for the app pick, based on the events of the past week, especially, but just really the past 3-4 weeks, because I've been using this now for over a month, is Microsoft Copilot Pro, right? And so when I first experimented with this, my goal was to just kind of use it for image creation because the higher quality and the preference you would get as a paying customer was better. And that stuff's never ceased to amaze. I am so impressed and so happy with the quality of the images I make with this thing. But since then, I've been experimenting with more stuff. We briefed over this, or we talked about this briefly a few minutes ago, but I've been looking at its integration, especially in Microsoft Word, but across Office, things like document summary. And I've been pushing my book chapters against it, especially, but also some of my longer premium pieces, just to see, okay, what do you make of this? And you know what? It's not bad. It really isn't bad. We joked about it, but it's really not bad at all. The thing I'm really looking forward to, of course, is the GPT Builder, which isn't out yet. So people who pay for Copilot, whether it's Copilot Pro or Copilot Microsoft 365, will get some sort of I'm sure it's called an AI, you know, GPT Studio or AI, so whatever the name of the thing is. And you'll be able to train this thing against your own data, right? This is basically the OneDrive Copilot thing I've been kind of looking for. And that's what I really want to do, is set this thing loose on my entire body of work over 30 years and then have it come back and tell me it might be time to retire, Paul. I don't know why you're still doing this. I don't know. We'll see how smart it is. But I've been really happy with Microsoft Copilot and Pro, and kind of surprised by how happy I am with it, if that makes sense. Like, I keep waiting for some kind of major fail, and it's honestly doing pretty great.
Nice.
It's worth looking at.
Ask it for some Pope pictures, see what happens.
Nice. Yeah, actually, I'll do that while Rich is talking. I'll tell you what I get. Some pictures of the Pope.
And incidentally,
Richard Campbell as the Pope.
It's a nice segue into this week's Run As Radio.
And I think we've already plugged last week's enough times that Jeff Woolsey talking about the next version of Server.
Can I just say real quick, I love that guy. I love him.
Great. He's a great guy.
Absolutely. And that was a great show.
Martina Grom's a great friend of mine, RD out of Austria, and one of the ladies I go to routinely to talk about governance-related issues. And one of them, the one we talked about this time around, was M365 governance. The catchphrase that we sort of led off with, I'm like, listen, I've been reading about what I'm going to need to do for my organization to really let M365 Copilot into the organization. And they sort of had this casual statement. It seems harmless. Make sure your data estate is in order. And here's the reality. Nobody's data estate is in order. Like, there's just not, how would you even measure that? Like, how would you know? So the conversation really dove into, well, what are we talking about here? And it's really about understanding what is sensitive information in your organization, what should be available to everyone, creating some tiers and essentially organize that data. There are great tools around this now, stuff like Microsoft Purview, and it really will help you go down the path of starting to recognize you know, what you want Copilot to make available to everyone and what should only be made available to certain folks. Because if there's one thing Copilots are good at is summarizing data. And if they go across your entire organization and summarize data, they're going to summarize all kinds of things that you might not want actually that they're showing. Great conversation. Really drove into the tools and techniques and things you need to do to at least have some confidence that as you start to roll out M365 Copilot, it doesn't become a problem. That concern, you know, what you don't want is that reaction from leadership saying, turn it off now. And that's a risk, without a doubt, with a tool like this.
Awesome.
All I get to say about that.
Well, let's talk about something else.
I was trying to make a picture of you as the Pope, but it's not coming out right.
Pope Richard the First.
Things might burst into flames. Nothing good could come.
Well, I'm thinking we didn't have a brown liquor pick last week. We did have a very nice cocktail pick.
About yeah, you talked about cocktails, yeah. Right, which is cool. I've been hesitating to public to do the whole talk about the origin of the cocktail and stuff like that. But
oh, nice!
Because I keep drinking whiskey in different places, and then they wanted to tell stories. And that's this week's whiskey is a whiskey that I had on one of my stops. I've been trying to stop at friends' places. I'm between all the other places that I'm going, and so on my way to London, I swung through Houston because it's kind of on the way. And some friends of mine introduced me to this Isle of Skye whiskey. Now, you've heard the term Isle of Skye before. It's part of the Hebrides chain, not a big deal, in the northwest of Scotland. Islay is part of that chain, as is Jura, all the ones that have distilleries on it. And Skye is no exception. There's many other islands you haven't heard of, but that's because they don't have distilleries. The main distillery on Skye is called Talisker, and we're not going to talk about Talisker today because that's a whole other conversation. It's one of Diageo's big distilleries. And I would be remiss to say it's the only one. There's another one called Torrevejg, which is a newer place. But the main thing is this is where the Clan MacLeod is from. So remember Highlander?
You bet.
Yeah, the Clan MacLeod. In fact, when Talisker was building their distillery back 200 years ago, they bought land from the Clan MacLeod. But this is not a segment about Talisker. So we're actually going to talk about a different MacLeod, Ian MacLeod. Ian MacLeod Distillers was actually...
He was from the TV series, actually, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yeah. And there can only be one whiskey. Founded back in 1933, so not that old, but they were not a distillery then. They were a bottler, and so they were buying whiskey barrels from various places and doing their own blends, and their original blend was called Isle of Skye. And that's not the whiskey we're talking about either, because that's an older version which has gone through many iterations. They were acquired by the Russell family in 63, who's now bought up a bunch of other distilleries. They became MacLeod Distillers only in 2003 when they bought the Glengoyne distillery, which is the first time they actually owned a distillery. They're also known for making a whiskey called Smokehead. That was back in 2006. So this was an attempt when whiskey was becoming hip in the early aughts to make a younger targeted whiskey. And so they're a little bit sweeter, but still very smoky, very peaty, as the most Isle of Skye whiskeys are. They also have merch. It's the first time I've ever seen the word merch on a whiskey distillery website. So, yep, they sell merch. They've also bought some Speysides. They own the Tamdhu Distillery. And recently, about 10 years ago, they acquired the Rosebank Distillery. And that's a whole other conversation. Arguably, Rosebank was one of the very finest lowland distilleries ever made. It sits between Glasgow and Edinburgh, and it's like a whole other conversation. Let's talk about Isle of Skye. And we're going to talk specifically about their blended edition that they released in the U.S. only last year, June of 2023 is when it first started coming in. So they've been making Isle of Skye editions in the U.K. for quite some time, but they made a separate release in the U.S. Some of them can be very hard to find, but they make an 8, a 12, an 18, a 21, a 25, and a 30. What they're doing is they're blending Highland and Speysides and a little island whiskey as well. You know, the whole thing with the Isle of Skye, as long with Islay and so forth, and we talked about this in the Scottish whiskey series, is that they don't have a lot of trees to dry malt with. They have peat to dry malt with, which is why their whiskeys are peaty. And then as peaty whiskeys became hip, they got better at creating peat flavors in whiskeys, and they actually made stronger ones. And so You know, Smokehead was an example of them, sort of contemporary versions of peated whiskeys. The Isle of Skye whiskeys are lightly peated, so they're blending different whiskeys together. And because it has an age appellation on it, you know these are not whiskey blends with grain alcohol in it, because grain alcohol is obviously not aged. So they are blended through multiple sets of barrels, the youngest in it being 21 years old. And so, boy, this drinks well. Holy man. But for any 21-year-old, it would. And some of the experts have said, this is the stuff of dreams, which is a good line. Now, this is not a production quantity sufficient to be found in a Total Wine or a BevMo. You're going to have to go to a specialty whiskey shop to get this stuff. And so it's going to vary in price. I found as low as 120 US, as high as 200. Depends on where you can find it, which is a lot for a whiskey. Not a lot for a 21. In fact, for a 21, it's a bargain. Most 21s, like if you could find a Dalmore Portwood or a Belvini Portwood 21, probably $300. So from a 21-year-old perspective, it's a pretty good price at $200 or maybe $175 if you can find it for that. But $175 for a blended whiskey, holy man, that's a lot. But, you know, you can buy a Chivas 18 these days or a Chivas 12 too, and they're also, you know, a little bit more expensive. Unless you like spending money on whiskey, then you should definitely try this. It drinks great. Main thing I'd buy this for is someone who loves whiskey and has never had a 20-year-old. And so getting, you know, your opportunity to buy a reasonable, a better priced older whiskey, you know, in a 21, that's a find. And you will be delighted. It's a not so much peat that you feel like you're licking a dirty ashtray. Certainly has those sweet notes that you know it's a Spey and Highland in there. They've done a great job of making exceptional whiskey, and it's for what it is, it's an extraordinary value.
Isle of Skye. It's from Ian McLeod Distillers, right. And what's the website?
What did I do with that? Sorry.
I could probably find it. I'm looking at it. Yeah. IanMcLeod.com, MacLeod.com/ Isle of Skye. They have a lot of different.
I was looking at my notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ian McLeod makes a bunch of products. This Isle of Skye line is their original name going back to 33 when they were making it with these a different way. But this U.S. edition, and I come to appreciate it, really is a U.S. edition. Is fantastic. I'm just blown away by it. And it's cool to have older blends rather than just, you know, generic blends. Like Famous Grouse is a blend of Highland Park and Macallan, but it's also 50% grain alcohol, which is why it's $20 for a bottle. And by the way, a good drink. Like, I got nothing. You put a Famous Grouse in front of me, I'm going to drink it. No question.
Paul was unable to pull up a
I wouldn't pope. Refused to make a picture of Richard as the Pope.
But
refused.
He did.
So I had to go in a different direction.
A Jim Beam kind of.
Are we worshiping Jim Beam?
Okay. I think a monkey's worshiping Jim Beam.
Some of the other images were less suitable for work. oddly.
Wow.
There was one that had a Christ imagery in the background on a cross.
Yeah,
which I thought was, you know, maybe inappropriate. But yeah, that was, yeah. Curious.
Yeah, no, I don't know how popey I want to be. So, totally. I mean,
I imagined a gold throne flying through the sky. Maybe like the .NET logo on the bottom of the throne or something.
I have done a project with the Vatican, but that's a that was mostly working with cardinals. We never did meet the Pope.
Aw.
Yeah.
Well, that's about it for this week's Windows Weekly, my friends.
I don't know what happened. I thought this was going to be long.
I have plenty of time for gas station sushi today, it looks like.
Oh, that's too bad. Sometimes. Let me tell you something. I've had gas station sushi in Mexico, and if you thought it couldn't get any worse, I have had.
You want to have time to savor the flavor.
Yeah. You know, if you dip it in strong enough alcohol before you eat it, you might survive.
They do add like spicy sauces to the side. It's not just soy sauce, but
yeah.
Not good. You get really spoiled on sushi in Vancouver because we have very, very good sushi and a large diversity of fish and so forth.
Yeah, 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 by the ocean.
Yeah, no, we actually here in Mexico City, same thing. It's actually rather unbelievable.
Which is puzzling because you're not by the ocean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the Paris of Mexico, right?
Everything comes city. Yeah. And they have the stuff going in.
Richard,
but you're in a small town.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, you're in a smaller town in New Zealand and you get sushi.
Yeah.
You get a choice between tuna, salmon, and chicken.
Chicken sushi. No.
Chicken.
Chicken in the sea or just chicken?
Oh, no, it's chicken.
That's
no, chicken sushi.
You don't want to see that.
It's cooked chicken, but it's chicken.
Well, I'm glad it's cooked. I don't think raw chicken is ever a good idea.
No, that's probably not a good idea. Yeah.
Richard, are you going to be in PV another week or are you going home?
Yeah, I got another week here.
Awesome.
And then we'll do another PV. And then the week after that is the MVP Summit. So I will be in Redmond.
Nice. Very nice.
Look at that. I have to go back to
traveling
reality.
Traveling man. And Paul's going back to reality. Are you going to be in Macungie?
No, I'll be here next week. Okay. But after that.
Yeah, the kids are coming down. You got to stay a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then there'll be the volcano evacuation.
I know. We thought the earthquake scare was bad enough, but now we're going to have ash raining down like snow,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, Lord.
What's a pyroclastic volcano between friends?
Thank you, sir. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. You can watch us do it live. It's not recommended, but you can.
Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, honestly.
I really wouldn't if I were you.
I mean, roll your own, but
We stream it. YouTube has it, youtube.com/twit. We also, of course, stream it in the club Twit Discord. What else do we do? We put it on the website at twit.tv/ww for your delectation after the fact. You can also do a little post-podcast delectation at youtube.com/windowsweekly. That's a channel dedicated to the video versions of Windows Weekly. Or, of course, subscribe in your favorite podcaster so you get it the minute it is available. Paul Theroux at Theroux.com. That's his website. Become a premium member and get all the goodness. He also sells his books at leanpub.com, including Windows Everywhere and the Field Guide to Windows 11. Always being updated constantly.
It's awful.
It's his own
Sisyphean
personal
moment.
Exactly. I was thinking Sisyphus too. He pushes the rock up the hill and it rolls right back down.
I just went and looked this up originally. I thought this thing was going to be about 400 pages long.
How long is it?
It's 1,100 pages.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not even, it's not done. It's not like it's done. It's
can
like,
you bind that? Wow. I don't think you can bind that. It's going to have to be a multi-part series.
Unbelievable.
You'd be the Lord of the Rings of Windows.
Yes. Yes.
And it's, now volume five.
Yes. I often quote Tolkien. He said, the tale grew in the telling.
Yeah. Well,
it was supposed to be a short story.
Yep. They invented the trilogy because of that book.
Did they really? Is that true?
Yeah. The original trilogy is The Lord of the Rings because Tolkien wouldn't make it any shorter.
It was originally going to be one book. Yeah.
Just refused. Yeah.
Bless him.
Well, he originally had that one first.
You know what? Maybe I'll separate them out. They'll call the first part The Fellowship of the Ring or The Fellowship of the Insider Program or something.
The Two Towers.
Yeah.
And then The Return of the Co-Pilot.
Nice. Yep.
Richard Campbell does Run As Radio, the podcast at runasradio.com. He also does .NET Rocks. That's there as well. Joins us every week, as does Paul, for this episode, this wonderful thing, this podcast, this show.
I should have called in from the airplane.
You should have.
Surprised you didn't.
That's for the boondoggle.
You're like, guess where I'm calling you from?
The person in front of me keeps looking back.
For some reason.
It's like, what?
I'm calling.
Like 8 hours in a plane.
From the airplane.
What?
Thank you, everybody. We'll have a great weekend. We'll see you right back here next week for Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.